summary of key points in Part 1. There is no objective reality independent of an observer. We live in a participatory universe. The observer affects what is observed by the mere act of observing. Quantum entities exist in a multiplicity of simultaneous potential states, called a superposition, hovering in an abstract realm between existence and non-existence prior to being observed. The act of observation is the very act which turns the potentiality of the quantum world into the actuality of the seemingly ordinary world. Our act of observation not only changes the present state of the universe, it reaches backwards in time and changes what we can say about the past. The questions we ask make a difference. The laws of physics are not written in stone, but are mutable. The universe is a seamless, undivided, and interconnected whole. An expression of this wholeness is that each part of the universe is in communication with every other part in an immediate and unmediated way. Quantum entities can jump from one place to another without traversing the path in between. Quantum theory is discovering that mind and matter are not separate but interconnected. Quantum physics is revealing that the boundary between the inner and outer domains, however conventionally useful, does not ultimately exist. Quantum physics is showing us how we ourselves are moment by moment playing a key role in the creation of our experience. Plato's Cave. Just like the allegory of Plato's Cave, wherein people looking at shadows reflected on the wall of the cave believe the shadows to be reality itself, physics is dealing with lower dimensional shadow projections of reality, not reality itself. The greatest achievement of 20th century physics, to quote Sir James Jeans, is the general recognition that we are not yet in contact with ultimate reality. We are still imprisoned in our cave with our backs to the light and can only watch the shadows on the wall. It is as if the walls of the cave are representative of space and time, and matter is the shadows cast upon the screen of space and time, while the reality outside the cave which produces the shadows on the walls of the cave is outside of space and time. Using poetry to express the state of affairs, Jeans writes in his book, The Mysterious Universe, that events in time and space become no other than a moving row of magic shadow shapes that come and go. The laws of physics are stencil-like descriptions of a lower-level cross-section of a higher-dimensional immaterial reality. Eddington writes, "In the world of physics, we watch a shadow-graph performance of familiar life. The shadow of my elbow rests on the shadow table as the shadow ink flows over the shadow paper." When physicists look at quantum reality, they are not seeing the unmediated thing in itself, but rather abstract mathematical symbols that represent reality. To quote Eddington, "We have learnt that the exploration of the external world by the methods of physical science leads not to a concrete reality, but to a shadow world of symbols." No one has ever directly seen the quantum world. Physicists track its ghostly footprints, inferring the world of the quantum through the results of their experiments. In doing physics, as Bohr points out, it must be recognized that we are here dealing with a purely symbolic procedure. The symbols utilized by physics represents the underlying reality, the nature of which remains hidden, mysterious, and inaccessible. If physicists regard their theories as direct descriptions of reality as it is, there is a high possibility of falling into the error of confusing the map with a territory. One of the greatest advances of the new physics is the realization that it isn't dealing with reality per se, but with the projections of a deeper reality cast into the third dimension as it interfaces with our consciousness through the instruments of our brain and nervous system. Speaking about his own field of psychology, Jung writes, "I have not the faintest idea what psyche is in itself. Yet, when I come to think and speak of it, I must speak of my abstractions, concepts, views, figures, knowing that they are our specific illusions. We have no idea of absolute reality, because reality is always something observed." Similarly, the elementary particles of the quantum realm are human abstractions, made up in our attempt to understand the mystery. To quote Eddington, "The frank realization that physical science is concerned with a world of shadows is one of the most significant of recent advances." Before the advent of quantum physics, physicists were under the delusion that they were dealing with reality itself, not realizing they were engaging with its mere shadows or projections. In studying physical reality, physicists are contemplating an echo of ultimate reality, not its source, as if they are seeing the reflection of God's countenance, not her face directly. When an echo is recognized for what it is, those who will not be satisfied with listening to anything but the source will begin to place their attention in the direction from which the echo emanates. In some sense, the higher dimension contains its third-dimensional projections within itself. These projections exist only as abstractions, however, which is to say that the source of the projections, the higher dimension, is not the same as the projections, but is something else entirely, something of a nature beyond and transcendent to its lower dimensional shadow projections. This is similar to how a reflection in the mirror is inseparable from the object that it is reflecting, while also not being the same as the object, which is beyond and transcendent to its mere reflections. Jung comments, "Science is the art of creating suitable illusions which the fool believes or argues against, but the wise man enjoys their beauty or their ingenuity without being blind to the fact that they are human veils and curtains concealing the abysmal darkness of the unknowable." If we are in the cave of shadows and don't know it, the shadows appear to be the real world, as we have no point of comparison. And yet, the shadows have no intrinsic, independent existence on their own, as they are merely derivative from, projections of, and inseparable from the light. After centuries of becoming habituated to a world of shadows, however, it is easy to become attached to the reality of the shadows, practically disbelieving in the light that informs them. As if mesmerized, enchanted, and spellbound by the display of the shadows, we have little suspicion of the light that is their source. Once we step out of the cave, however, we realize that there is and always has been only light. To recognize and see through the world of shadows is to be in the light. The cutting edge of 21st century physics is beginning to wonder, what is this higher dimensional form of light that is casting the shadows? How is it different from the electromagnetic light that the majority of scientists think of when they think of light? Could this higher dimensional form of light be the light of awareness itself, thereby related to the mysterious factor of consciousness? Discovering, or are they creating, a novel spiritual path, physicists are beginning to find within the world of shadows, in our case physical reality, the very light of consciousness that is its source. This is the light by which we see, not the visible light that we see with our physical senses. The light that we see with our eyes is itself a shadow on the walls of the cave of the third dimension, a lower-level shadow of the higher-dimensional, uncreated, living light of consciousness itself. This is an archetypal situation that wisdom traditions throughout the ages have been pointing at. Encoded within the shadow is hidden the light. The greatest pioneers of modern physics are beginning to look beyond the shadows, beyond the cave, beyond physics, beyond the physical world altogether into the realm of metaphysics and their own minds. This turning inwards and upwards, dimensionally speaking, is a watershed moment in the evolution of the science of the physical world. It is an epical inflection point in the very nature of the scientific endeavor, in which the quest for the deeper understanding of the nature of the physical world has finally gone beyond the physical world per se. In our inquiry into nature, humanity is beginning to realize that we can't exclude the aspect of nature within ourselves that is investigating nature. Science finds itself in the unexpected position of being irresistibly drawn into the higher dimensional worlds of consciousness, where much to its surprise, it is finding the deeper source of what we call the physical world. This is big news indeed. Voodoo forces. When two quantum entities interact, they become intermingled in such a way as to remain forever linked together, joined together at the hip, so to speak. Exhibiting a form of contagious magic, each seems to telepathically know what the other is doing. Once connected, their wave functions become phase entangled with each other, such that there are no longer two independent wave functions, but one which encompasses both quantum entities forevermore. After their interaction, each one leaves part of themselves with the other, leaving behind traces on each other. At that point, they are no longer separate in the way that they once seemed to be. In fact, even when separated by vast amounts of space and time, they behave in concert, as if they were one entity. Their quantum telepathy is due to the fact that they are not and have never been separate. Seeing quantum entities as separate is a delusion, an artifact of our limited, classically conditioned perspective. In actuality, there is just the underlying, unified, information-filled quantum field giving rise to transitory patterns which from one perspective may appear to be distinct entities, but which ultimately are expressions of a singular and indivisible field. Speaking of their enduring non-local entanglement, what Schrödinger calls the central mystery of quantum physics, Schrödinger writes, "I would not call that one, but rather the characteristic trait of quantum mechanics, the one that enforces its entire departure from classical lines of thought. Moreover, quantum entities do not exist in isolation, but are always coupled with an environment, the measuring apparatus, the mind of the physicist, as well as the rest of the universe. The system which is treated by the methods of quantum mechanics is in fact always and necessarily part of a much bigger system. The act of measurement, in Wheeler's words, the act of turning potentiality into actuality, is not a private affair, but a public event in which the whole universe participates. What if the quantum system under investigation is the whole universe, in which case there is nothing outside of itself to interact with? In Wheeler's words, there is no circumferential highway which would allow us to observe our universe from the outside. In other words, there is no external position from which to contemplate the universe. We are of the universe. There is no inside, no outside. This is what is meant by oneness, a oneness in which the whole universe, including ourselves, is contained. If we think of the whole universe not in relative terms, what would it be relative to? But in absolute terms, there is no place outside of it. How do we get outside the absolute, where we could take a stance to describe it? For if we could get outside of it, it wouldn't be absolute. One of the key lessons of quantum theory is that we are a part of the nature we seek to understand. No matter how much we scrutinize something seemingly outside of ourselves, such as physical objects made of matter, we are ultimately the subject of our own investigation. Quantum physics shows us that there is no inside versus outside when it comes to the ultimate reality of ourselves and the things of the world. The entire material world is essentially made of the same mysterious essence as we are. Everywhere we look, within and without, we only find our own self-nature assuming a vast diversity of differing forms, functions, and aspects. In inquiring into the world of the quantum, we are ultimately confronted with our own true face. If, as quantum physics tells us, the whole universe is quantum to its core, this suggests that the universe is inseparably phase-entangled with itself, as, ultimately, there is no part of itself that the universe is not non-locally connected with. This entanglement brings us face-to-face with a fact that what seems far off in space and time might be closer than our heartbeat. The quantum field is instantaneously interconnected with the totality of itself at each and every moment. This holistic perspective helps us understand David Bohm's words, "I'm saying that everything is the observer, and everything is the observed." Each and every non-separate part and particle of the universe is synchronized, orchestrated, and coordinated with the states and movements of every other part and particle in such a way that there is no lag time in information transmitting itself across space. Space, and the distance that it implies, does not pose any obstacle to the correlation of quantum states for the simple reason that the universe is actually one singular, indivisible system. The seemingly separate parts are a false appearance that occurs only within our minds as a result of our infirm viewpoint. Interestingly, the word infirm simultaneously connotes both sickness, infirmity, as well as being in a firm or rigid, fixed perspective. Quantum physics can serve as a medicine that helps us to correct the distortion in our materialist myopia. Its medicinal effect is particularly unique and has its own mode of healing, which can be called, in true quantum style, participatory medicine. In order to receive its benefits, we have to engage and participate with it through our efforts to understand what it is revealing to us. Non-locality is an expression of the indivisible wholeness of the universe. It represents an observable and measurable indication of the deeply singular and unitary nature of the cosmos, despite its apparent physical diversity. In a quantum universe such as ours, the universe is a unity, one big entangled state composed of its interdependent constituent parts. Just like the whole contains its parts, each part contains and is not separate from the whole. Thinking of these parts as separate has nothing to do with the reality of things, but is purely a fabrication of the mind that does not correspond to the actuality of the world. A separate entity is encountered only in thought, and is never found in reality. The quantum world has never heard of or experienced space or time, as if in some strange way a quantum entity thinks of itself as always being in one place at the same time, a place that is not localizable, because it is, in a sense, everywhere at once. For example, a photon of light traveling from point A to point B does so from its point of view in no time, meaning that in some sense, the two points aren't actually separate. The separation is only apparent as an artifact of the way we've been conditioned to view things. From the photon's perspective, it is not moving at all, but simply standing still. At the speed of light, the beginning and the end of the light ray are separated by neither time nor space. All of space shrinks to a single point. From the photon's perspective, distance has no place in its existence, and all of time collapses to an instant, a single instant in which, paradoxically, everything that has ever happened and ever will happen takes place. In the realm of light, therefore, there is no before or after. There is only now. Interestingly, while light does not experience space or time in its own reference frame, it is the measurement of light that defines space and time in ours. In our reference frame, we experience ourselves as moving very slowly compared to the speed of light, and yet the matter composing our bodies, which provides the locus for our conventional human frame of reference, is itself composed of nothing but crystallized light, which is in its vibratory essence always moving at light speed. So light and light speed are inescapable fundamentals in the structure and construction of the universe. Matter, and the appearance of a sub-light speed frame of reference that accompanies it within space-time, are secondary derivatives from the fundamental universal frame of reference of light itself. Another interesting feature of light is that it can never be caught up with and overtaken. Like the horizon, no matter how fast we go, it is always the same distance away. Similarly, we can never catch in our grasp the elusive quantum. The elementary particles that make up the quantum realm appear to be involved in a continual, never-ending exchange of information. Transcending the conventional third-dimensional rules of space and time, non-local interaction is characterized by instant informational exchange, where one part of the universe, in no time whatsoever, outside of time, appears to interact, affect, and communicate with another part of the universe in an immediate, unmitigated, and unmediated way. Imagine, in baseball terminology, a throw from deep center field to home plate. Only the outfielder is on the other side of the universe, and the ball takes 0 seconds to arrive. To quote Houston Smith, "If both mind and matter are non-local, we are on our way to regaining what was lost in Newton's time, a complete whole world in which we can live complete whole lives, in the awareness that we are more interrelated than we had thought." Non-locality's action at a distance is an expression of an underlying and outflowing information-filled field which connects and inextricably links every part of the universe with every other part in no time. For something to be non-local in terms of space is to be omnipresent. Non-locality, according to Henry Stapp, could be the most profound discovery in all of science. The recognition that our universe is non-local has more potential to transform our conceptions of the way things are, including who we are, than any previous discovery in the history of science. Being that quantum physics is the most accurate means of describing how atoms turn into molecules, and since molecular relationships are the basis of all chemistry, and chemistry is the basis of all biology, entanglement and non-locality could well be the secret to life itself. The non-locality of the universe is a reflection of a part of our nature that is likewise unlimited. Jung comments, I simply believe that some part of the human self or soul is not subject to the laws of space and time. The non-locality of our universe is reflected in the realm of psyche. Speaking of the collective unconscious, Jung comments that it seems to be like an omnipresent continuum, an unextended everywhere. That is to say, when something happens here at point A, which touches upon or affects the collective unconscious, it has happened everywhere. The implication is that when any of us becomes more awake to the unconscious within ourselves, the quanta of consciousness registers throughout and thereby changes the whole universe. The seemingly separate parts of the universe are connected in such a way as to non-locally, over inconceivably vast distances of space and time, influence and provide instantaneous feedback for each other, as if telepathically communicating with each other faster than the speed of light. This is another aspect of quantum reality that greatly troubled Einstein, what he referred to as spooky action at a distance. The superluminal, greater than the speed of light, interaction seemingly involved in a non-local universe is not any form of interaction we are familiar with, as it doesn't involve any expenditure of energy or exchange of information in the conventional manner. And yet, innumerable experiments in physics have all conclusively shown that what Einstein derided as voodoo forces do indeed exist, at least as much as we do. Wholeness. There is truly nothing like our universe. Having no frame of reference outside of itself, there is nothing to compare it with. Our non-local universe's spooky action at a distance is an expression of the fundamental, indivisible wholeness of the universe, which is radically different from classical physics' previous conception of the universe as composed of separate parts. Thinking that the universe is made of composite parts is an abstraction from the real state of affairs. At the quantum level, there is a radically new notion of intrinsic unbroken wholeness, a seamless interconnectedness among all of the universe's seemingly separate parts. At the quantum level, the universe is one with itself. In a quantum universe, everything is related to everything else. At the moment of observation, the observer and the observed compose a single, unified whole. The quantum universe, as Bohr could not emphasize enough, can be properly conceived of only as an intricately interconnected, dynamic whole. In Buddhism, a beautiful image portrays this interconnectedness called Indra's net. In this image, the whole universe is represented by an infinitely interpenetrating net of glittering jewels. The gems are set at every knot on the net. Each jewel in the net reflects the light reflected in all of the other jewels. Each of those jewels, in turn, reflects the light from all of the jewels around them. And this multifaceted, mutually reflective process goes on forever into infinite space. Each of the jewels contains and reflects the radiance of the whole universe, which is to say that the whole universe can be seen reflected in each of its parts. On such a net, no jewel is in the center or at the edge, while, depending on our point of reference, the opposite is also true. Each and every jewel is at the center and at the edge. Each jewel can be conceived of as being an individual, localized spark of consciousness, which is simultaneously reflecting and being reflected by the whole universe. The polishing of any jewel in the net makes it more reflective, thereby enhancing the overall radiance of the whole net. This is to say that as each of us expands our conscious light of self-reflective awareness, the whole universe shines that much brighter. To quote David Bohm, the inseparable quantum interconnectedness of the whole universe is the fundamental reality. An expression of this undivided wholeness, the fundamental reality, is that consciousness is no longer separated from matter, but somehow is essential to it. Consciousness is not one thing, and matter another thing that it interacts with. On the quantum level, consciousness and matter are indistinguishable. As Bohm points out, if we don't see this, it's because we are blinding ourselves to it. Later in his life, Bohm would use the analogy of trying to separate the north and south pole of a magnet to illustrate the impossibility of separating consciousness from matter. If we try to separate the north and south poles of a magnet by cutting the magnet in half, we simply generate a new north and south pole for each of the new halves. Bohm writes, "Thus we could come to the germ of a new notion of unbroken wholeness, in which consciousness is no longer to be fundamentally separated from matter." Just as Einstein's theory of relativity abolished the dichotomy of space and time, and modern psychosomatic medicine dissolved the distinction between mind and body, quantum physics undermines the final remnants of the traditional Cartesian dualism of matter and consciousness. After a health scare that included a supposedly near-death experience, Wheeler realized that the one thing in physics that he felt more responsible for than anything else was how everything fit together. In his last years, he was particularly interested in whether the mind was irrelevant to the structure of the universe or central to it. From the sound of it, Wheeler's brush with death refocused his attention on the big picture, that is, on what existence is all about. As science increasingly sheds light on the deeper intrinsic wholeness of the universe, it runs into its own edge, as science, by definition, can't define wholeness any more than mathematicians can define mathematically an empty set, or cosmologists can define the universe before its origins. Definition requires difference between at least two points of reference. Science can only deal in correlations between the behavior of parts. Science, to quote Robert Nadeau and Minas Kafatos, authors of The Conscious Universe, can say nothing about the actual character of the undissectable whole from which the parts are emergent phenomena. This whole is literally indescribable in the sense that any description, including those of ordinary language, divides the indivisible. Creating duality, in our example between the seeming opposites of matter and consciousness, out of something that is inherently seamlessly non-dual, is as impossible as trying to separate heat from a flame, wetness from water, or sweetness from sugar. Our attempts at bifurcating what is intrinsically one with itself is a project that not only is doomed to failure, but is at bottom an insane enterprise that is the generative root for the Wetiko mind virus. Bohm had strong faith that a proper understanding of the nature of matter could help bring human consciousness into order. Our universe is an emergent universe in which the whole is greater than the sum of any of its parts, and greater than any of its parts can even imagine. In the same vein, human beings are also emergent phenomena. Playing off the famous saying, "less is more," Wheeler had a fondness for the expression, "more is different." A substance made up of a great number of molecules, for example, has properties that no one molecule possesses. Its difference is qualitative rather than quantitative. An example is water, which is made up of two gases, hydrogen and oxygen. Neither hydrogen nor oxygen exists in a fluid state by itself, but when combined, the liquidness that emerges from their aggregation is an emergent property that arises from their mutual interaction, which neither of the separate parts contain in themselves. This is similar to how single letters of the alphabet lack the quality of poetry, but when arranged in a certain way, can have undreamed-of effects. At the holistic level of quantum reality, relationship creates identity. To try to understand the whole system by studying its seemingly discrete constituents apart from one another only leads so far. In quantum reality, relationship is truly creative. Similar to a hologram, where every part contains an image of the whole even when divided, in each part of the quantum system, the whole is encoded. Due to the holistic, indivisible, and holographic nature of the quantum realm, in which the whole is implicitly encoded in each of its seemingly separate parts, by focusing on a seemingly partial aspect of reality, such as the smallest fragment of the microworld, we gain, in a practically magical way, access to the whole. Schrödinger writes, "This life of yours, which you are living, is not merely a piece of the entire existence, but is, in a certain sense, the whole. Only this whole is not so constituted that it can be surveyed in one single glance." Heidegger offered an analogy to describe the wholeness of truth, comparing truth to a drinking glass. As you turn the glass in order to see one aspect, you necessarily conceal another aspect. You can never see the whole glass, although it's all there in whatever aspect you see. It's as if the whole is unfolded within each of its parts, Or to say the same thing differently, each part is an expression of the whole. Each of the particular aspects contains a distinct perspective on the whole, while each part contains the whole. William Blake's Auguries of Innocence comes to mind. To see a world in a grain of sand, and a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour. Matrix Maya. To the extent that we are not awake to the dreamlike nature of our situation, we have fallen under what in Eastern traditions is called the power of Maya, the source of both our deepest illusions and our most exalted creativity. Etymologically, the word Maya comes from the root ma, which means to measure. This reflects the fact that measuring something, though adding to our knowledge of the world on the one hand, can at the same time obscure us from the deeper, unbroken wholeness of reality on the other. It is noteworthy in this regard that the central enigma of quantum physics having to do with the role of the observer is called the measurement problem. Maya has to do with a primal power that gives shape to the potentiality intrinsic to form. It has to do with the power to turn an idea into physical reality, and is related to the role of the imagination in creating the world. Maya refers to how the reality-creating power of our own mind can be unwittingly turned against us so as to entrance us. The creator of illusions, Maya is that which makes the real appear unreal, and the unreal appear real. The power of Maya inspires delusions and false beliefs, such as when we believe the images in our minds are the external world. Through the wizardry of Maya, we wield the cosmic creative power of shaping and giving meaning to appearances. Maya is related to the word magic. Schrödinger, in his book Science and Humanism, talks about the problems confronting modern physics. He is referring to Maya when he cites, "an evil godmother, if you please, like the 13th fairy in the tale of the Sleeping Beauty." Likewise, he uses words such as evil spell, counterspell, and exorcise. The fact that one of the 20th century's greatest scientists, in speaking about the discoveries of quantum physics, talks in such mythic symbolic terms should give us pause. It should also help us gain insight into the archetypal energies of the psyche that modern physics has tapped into. A contemporary mythic framework that can give meaningful insight into the significance of the discoveries of quantum physics is what is known by many as the Matrix, the vast global, corporate, technocratic control and monitoring system. We live under greater surveillance than any civilization in all of history. Think of the NSA and the Edward Snowden revelations. The Matrix is based on keeping people trapped within a paradigm of false and superficial knowledge of themselves and the universe known as materialism. It is fundamentally about centralizing power and control, as it enslaves people under deceptive lies of limitation and lack of options, keeping them disconnected from their own immense creative power. The Matrix operates through the process of compartmentalization, which prevents any one person from knowing too much. This is a reflection of a process of fragmentation going on within the human psyche that is being acted out and expressed in the outside world, which then serves to feed back into and reinforce to the psyche the very same fragmentation. Through a carefully orchestrated need-to-know basis, the Matrix keeps different groups of people who are serving its power structure partially informed and purposely disconnected from each other, so that no one but those at the top of the pyramid of power can know the overall big picture and hidden agenda in which they are unwittingly playing supportive roles. This isn't a paranoid conspiracy theory. The evidence is all around us for those who have eyes to see. The Matrix control system has co-opted the powerful liberating knowledge of quantum physics to use instead for its own power-based agenda. There is a cultural bias, a subtle and sometimes not so subtle conspiracy that prevents us from knowing just how much we are contributing to the very world we are experiencing. Seen symbolically, by barring inquiry into quantum physics' metaphysical implications, the existing power structure has practically cast a materialist, nihilistic evil spell upon quantum physics itself. Like the evil godmother in Sleeping Beauty, the Matrix keeps the liberating quantum gnosis asleep and under its control. It would be the powers that be's worst nightmare to have the spiritual dynamite that is the quantum revelation get out and be more widely accessible by the human population at large. The whole scenario is revealing a deeper archetypal process that exists in the collective unconscious, which is to say that the actual people who compose the matrix, which is all of us, we are all just playing different interdependent roles, are merely instruments for this deeper process to potentially become conscious. With the true power of the quantum spellbound, its liberating powers temporarily anesthetized, the matrix is free to use the denatured knowledge of quantum physics to serve its own agenda of centralizing worldly power and extending its technocratic control over the material world. When it comes to the world's body politic, it is crucial for us to realize the extent of the massive spell that is being woven all around us through the propaganda organs, such as the mainstream media, of the prevailing order, which is itself under the very spell it is casting. We are continually being conditioned, programmed, brainwashed, and hypnotized beyond belief so as to buy into, to both consume and be consumed by, an impoverished version of who we are. To the extent that we don't connect with our true essence and express our true creative selves, we become domesticated like a trained animal. Just like a dream, where the outer and inner are reflections of each other, what is playing out in the outside world is a reflection of an archetypal process happening deep within the human psyche. This is to say that what is referred to as the matrix, though as real can be on the outer relative level of reality, is at the same time an outpicturing of an inner dreaming process happening deep inside each one of us. The fact that our immense powers of quantum creativity are being used against us, when we get down to it, is our own doing, which is the meaning of the word karma. For we ultimately bear the responsibility if we subscribe to, identify with, and live out a false, disempowered, and limited version of who we actually are. Realizing that we have been unconsciously complicit in dreaming a self-limiting dream is the first step in taking our power back. Connecting with our true identity as sovereign creative agents who are learning to think and act independently invariably results in bringing an end to the matrix's ability to control us. We can subsequently become proactively engaged with each other through our aforementioned sacred power of dreaming to re-envision ourselves into empowered creative agents who can further liberate the human spirit, allowing the latent genius intrinsic to the spirit to inform and give shape to our world. Quantum physics is showing us how we, both individually and collectively as a species, have been entrained, put under a self-created and self-limiting spell, and conditioned and programmed by our own mind. Its liberating insights are truly like some sort of miracle from on high, and yet they are the most natural thing of all. To quote Dr. Jeffrey Satinover, quantum mechanics allows for the intangible phenomenon of freedom to be woven into human nature. The revelations of quantum physics are offering us the keys to our intrinsic freedom. Heisenberg writes, "Classical physics seemed to bolt and bar the door leading to any sort of freedom of the will. The new physics hardly does this, but it almost seems to suggest that the door may be unlocked, if only we could find the handle." Whereas classical physics showed us a universe that, in Heisenberg's words, looked more like a prison than a dwelling place, the new physics, he continues, might conceivably form a suitable dwelling place for free men. It is therefore up to us to cast a counterspell and help to wake up the sleeping beauty of quantum physics by liberating it from the confines of an impoverished paradigm, freeing it from the ideological straitjacket of a power-hungry utilitarian reductionism. The best way to do this is to partake in the most radical, subversive, and powerful form of activism that there is, recognizing and then engaging our own quantum nature. To quote Amit Goswami, "The central idea of quantum activism is not that we must advocate a dogma, but rather that we must learn how to be free of dogma." Schrödinger's cat is out of the bag as well as the box, and we, each of us, have to come to terms with what the insights of quantum physics are revealing about ourselves and the world we live in. The biggest obstacle in bringing the liberating quantum gnosis into our world today is not the powers that be suppressing this knowledge, but rather the programmed, limited, and fear-based state of most people's minds. Many people, even in their wildest dreams, can't imagine the good news that the quantum is openly offering to everyone. To quote poet Ralph Waldo Emerson, "People see only what they are prepared to see." It is helpful to remember that due to the quantum's non-local nature, which allows it not to be bound by third-dimensional space and time, it can't actually or ultimately be hidden, kept down, bound, or imprisoned. This is to all of our advantages. Philip K. Dick refers to this as the secret weapon of truth. It can't be suppressed because of its nature. If it could be, it would be only opinion. This state of affairs is typically portrayed in mythologies the world over, in which the highest, most sacred value is impossible to be destroyed. The quantum is naturally buoyant, always ascending towards the light of consciousness, which is not separate from its and our nature.